Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, friends and neighbors. Welcome back to the Bill Press Pod. It's Friday morning, June 4, and time for this week's roundtable, looking back at the news of the week with three of Washington's top political journalists, or as Donald Trump calls them, enemies of the people. We call them friends. Even with Congress out of town, it's been a busy news week. President Biden continues to press for a bipartisan deal on infrastructure. Pressure mounts on Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema to join other Democrats in killing or defanging the filibuster. Donald Trump is reportedly gearing up for two campaign rallies later this month, as Michael Flynn, his former short-lived national security advisor, suggests that a violent military coup is just what this country needs. In the middle of which, President Biden goes to the beach. So much to talk about. Let's jump right in with today's panel. Addie Baird, political reporter for BuzzFeed. Hello, Addie.
Hi, Bill.
Jason Dick, deputy editor of CQ Roll Call. Hello, Jason.
Hello, Bill.
And joining us for the first time today, and very welcome, Jamal Simmons, political contributor to CBS News, among other hats that he wears. Hello, Jamal.
Hey, how you doing?
All right. So let's start with infrastructure. The president is talking again today with the lead Republican negotiator, Senator Shelley Moore Capito from West Virginia. Jason, is there really any chance for a deal?
I am a bit skeptical of it, Bill. By the way, when I lived in West Virginia for a couple of years in the early 2000s with the AmeriCorps program, I never imagined that West Virginia would be the most powerful state in the country with Joe Manchin and Shelley Moore Capito getting so much attention. But there you are. It seems like I do think that Joe Biden and Shelley Moore Capito are actually very earnest in their desire to get some sort of deal. Biden is someone who I think is not too worried about sort of ruffling Democratic feathers about like going it alone. I think he'd rather get a smaller deal and you know, sort of call it a day and head for a bike ride on Rehoboth Beach, as he did this week, as you mentioned, then get everything on the Democratic wish list. But, you know, there's just a lot going on. And I think a lot of folks in Congress, particularly, you know, in the sort of harder edged people who are like, we have to get everything done before the 2022 midterm, you know, seasons. And that's putting a lot of pressure. But I think Biden and Capito really want to get something, and the fact that they're both still talking, I think, is a real sign.
So, Addie, you hang around there. I mean, there are a lot of Democrats who are saying Biden's just waiting too long, right? That he's making the same mistake Obama did of counting on these Republicans to come around when they never will.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think that there's some trauma from the ACA. I think that there are people who feel like, you know, the kind of way this is, it's a little funny, right? Biden's been in office for only a little more than 100 days, and we're already like, all right, like, let's pick it up. Like, we've got the 2022 midterms, like, at our backs. But you're right. Like, there are definitely, kind of like Jason mentioned, there are Democrats who feel really differently, who are not willing to give up really important central pieces of this legislation or of all of these other kind of pieces of the Biden agenda. And one thing I do think is interesting and that I've just been thinking a bit about lately is the way that Biden's platform when he was running and campaigning, I talked to a lot of progressive activists who were like, this is actually kind of everything we wanted. But I always kind of was waiting for this moment where Biden is, he wants to make deals and go for a bike ride. Like, that's Joe Biden. That is not true, especially for some of these more progressive Democrats on the Hill, and definitely not true for a lot of the progressive base. So there's some frustration there for sure.
Jamal, we've been talking about infrastructure for so long, right? Even Donald Trump said $1 trillion for infrastructure. Can the Republicans really walk away with no infrastructure bill?
Well, you know, the dynamics of the Republican Party are not based on policy or any of the normal inputs that those of us who've been in politics for a while pay attention to. This is really a culture. It's a culture war. And so as long as they're true on the culture aspect of it, then and particularly white, straight Christian culture, let's be specific. As long as they stay true on that, then they'll kind of get along. The base will never punish them for not going along with it. And in fact, they have a greater risk of being punished for going along with these traitors to what the base considers to be the real America. So I think that the push is against them doing it. But on the other hand, you've got Biden, where he's got all these dynamics that are pushing him to try and to visibly show that he's trying, mostly because most of the people who voted for Joe Biden in the presidential election, if you look at the ideology, most of them were moderates to conservatives, right? The liberals were actually the minority of the number of people who voted for him. So he needs to hold together this alliance of progressive Democrats, moderate Democrats, and those disaffected Republicans who got him over the 50% mark. And if he can do that, then as long as he keeps that group together, then he is untouchable in the next election.
No pressure, though. Not hard.
Yeah, right.
Right. But that's why he goes through these histrionics of, you know, I think trying to be, you know, bipartisan and making all these efforts, and it frustrates the progressive Democrats. But he's got this other, you know, flank that he's got to hold together of the coalition.
Is he, Jamal, let me stick with you for just a sec. Is he capable, we're talking about the president here, Joe Biden, the man we know, of playing this out, you know, for another couple of weeks or something, and then just saying, well, screw it. I tried. Can't do it. So we're just going to go Democrats only.
Well, the question on there is, you know, where does Kristen Sinema and Joe Manchin come down on that question? And he's got to get them to be willing to go along with reconciliation. So, you know, and remember, he's only got one more reconciliation bullet left, I think. Mm-hmm. So he's got to use it wisely. And if he can get a Republican to go along with this, maybe he can use reconciliation for something else down the line.
Right. So, Jason, isn't this all the starting with the stimulus bill, the January 6th vote, and now this infrastructure, isn't this all leading to the inevitability of a nuclear fight over the filibuster?
I mean, we're kind of in it, right? I mean, already. I mean, in the ways that wars really start before the official starts of wars, you know, we're in this. And, you know, I think that a couple of months ago, when Democrats started to see that, you know, that Republicans were perhaps not debating, you know, things in good faith on things like the stimulus, that, you know, they started leaning on Manchin. They started leaning on Sinema because they had both said, like, we're not touching the filibuster, as if it's, you know, this thing that came down from the Hill, you know, with Moses or something. It's just, you know, it's crazy to me. You know, I've written about this, you know, this thought that the Senate is some big cooling saucer for the hot tea of the House. I mean, it's a bunch of hooey, you know. I mean, this is, you know, the filibuster is something that the Senate came up with itself. But, you know, these are the things that Joe Manchin wants to, you know, hang his hat on, and Kyrsten Sinema want to hang, you know, like they want to stick with this for whatever reason, because I guess they don't really believe in majority rule. So, I mean, I don't know where it goes from here, though, because Manchin and Sinema, I mean, one, Sinema you can't even count on her to show up for a vote on, say, the January 6th commission. And Manchin just seems very steadfast in wanting to stick with, you know, reaching out to, you know, to the Republicans. Now, he's in a different situation, of course, because he comes from this overwhelmingly Republican state and he's a Democrat. So, I mean, I get it, but I don't know where they get the votes to overturn, you know, the rule. It would take, you know, all 50 Democrats plus Kamala Harris's tie-breaking vote to change the Senate rules. So I just don't see that happening. I think we're going to be in this sort of Cold War filibuster thing for a while.
Well, you know, Manchin every day, he seems to be kind of all over the place, although he's clearly against changing the filibuster. But Kirsten Sinema, no doubt about how she stands. Here she is this week with the inevitable question about her flexibility.
Well, as folks in Arizona know, I've long been a supporter of the filibuster. The idea of the filibuster was created by those who came before us in the United States Senate to create comity and to encourage senators to find bipartisanship and work together.
So really encourages senators to work together?
Yeah.
Seems to me it does the opposite.
Right. This is sort of a funny, you know, sometimes members of Congress just say things and they sound like words that you know, but when you really try to make sense of them, they mean very little. And
that came across as like a poorly translated civics lesson,
yes,
for, you know, some other country or something. It was just, ugh.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Like, look, let's be clear about what the filibuster does in the United States Senate. It gives about four people extreme power over a chamber of 100 people. And those four people are like Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins, and these two Democrats that we've been discussing. And you know, it's like, it does not encourage bipartisanship. And if it did, I think we would have been looking at a really different last few years in this country. So I think we have a lot of evidence that this is not true.
Jamal, we hear a lot about maybe we leave the filibuster except for voting rights legislation, the For the People Act. Is that in the cards, do you think?
That may be the way that this ultimately shakes out, to keep Manchin and Sinema from, you know, to hold on to their initial promise, but then mm-hmm. be able to make some exceptions. You know, the thing about the filibuster, I guess this is the thing about, I guess, getting older now. I've been around long enough to see the filibuster be used by the good guys and by the bad guys.
Yeah.
Just during the Trump presidency, the Democrats used the filibuster to stop border wall funding, to stop the forcing of sanctuary cities to cooperate with, you know, the Trump government, to stop the prohibition of taxpayer funds against abortions. So the filibuster has been used by progressives to stop bad things too. And so the worry that Manchin has is a legitimate worry, that if you get rid of it, that the Republicans are going to do it. Here's the problem. The problem is Mitch McConnell is like the bully who beats you in the head all the time. So you're saying, I'm not going to hit you because I'm afraid you're going to hit me back, is not really a good approach to politics. Mm-hmm. Like, they're already hitting you. Like, in the old days, we were able, and Democrats are motivated a little bit more by policy. So Democrats didn't use it all the time. They used it when it made sense. The Republicans aren't motivated by policy. They're only motivated by power. And they're using it to deny the coalition of people in America who believe everybody ought to participate from having power in America, because their coalition believes white people ought to be the ones who decide everything. And so they're just standing up against it. I just think in this moment, you got to get rid of the filibuster, because you don't have a party on the other side that's actually willing to negotiate on behalf of what's best for the country.
Yeah. Jason, when is this going to come to a head?
I mean, it's like I said, I don't know, you know, like we could probably see a big flare up at the end of this month, because Chuck Schumer, the majority leader, has said he's going to bring the For the People Act to the floor. It deadlocked in a committee markup last month, but he can still bring it up under the rules of the Senate. So we could see, some sort of like movement or flare up there. You know, getting back to the January 6th commission, last Friday's vote, 54 people, 54 United States senators, you know, including, you know, a handful of Republicans voted for this legislation. And three people who were absent, including Kyrsten Sinema, but also Patty Murray, a member of leadership, and then another Republican, Pat Toomey, said that they would have voted it. So you got 57 votes to establish a January 6th commission, and that's still not enough to establish, you know, like a bipartisan commission. I mean, this, it's like Jamal said, one party, is its leadership is not negotiating in good faith here. And when, if you would tell somebody that if you got 57% in an election and it still wasn't enough to win, they would say, well, that's kind of an insane way of like tabulating results.
Well, Joe Manchin, Jason, is now saying, suggested yesterday, we should have a second vote. Vote again on January 6th, and we only need three more votes.
Right. And it's also, I mean, again, getting to the rules. I love this that, you know, Jamal's referencing a parliamentarian's ruling about reconciliation. And now we're talking about like bringing how to bring up legislation that's been defeated. It's like the rules committee we're doing here on the pod. I love it. No, I mean, they could, it would be kind of a pain to bring it up. I mean, there are ways that you can quickly bring up defeated legislation in the Senate, and the Democrats chose not to to utilize that. The majority leader can change his or her vote and then quickly bring it up. And Schumer didn't do that. So they'd have to go through another process, you know, which I frankly don't know exactly how that would work right now. So who knows? And, you know, let's be honest, it's probably good politics for Democrats to be able to hit Republicans over the head with this thing for a little while longer.
Well, I want to ask you about that, Jamal. Is it good? Jason said it's good politics for Democrats. Is it good politics for Republicans to be against basically, you know, a truth commission?
It's good good Republican base primary politics. Yes. Why? Because Donald Trump is against the commission, because Donald Trump doesn't want all of his dirty drawers strung out all over the street anymore about how he had his hands knee deep in this insurrection that took place. And so, listen, I think we are at the most perilous point I've seen in politics, and maybe the most perilous point since the early 1860s in this country, when you have so many people in this country who are willing to literally overthrow the mechanisms of democracy, both by violent means in the Capitol and by legislative means in state capitals around the country, in order to nullify the votes of other Americans who they disagree with. And that's really where we are. And that's why I think that that's why Joe Biden needs to do whatever it takes to get this stuff passed, because he's got to keep the rational people on board believing that the government can work. And we're at war with these irrational people led by an irrational president, former president Donald Trump.
Yeah, Addy, I was surprised yesterday to see, I don't know what it means, I guess I'm asking you, that Mike Pence spoke out about this for the first time and said he doesn't think that he and Donald Trump will ever see eye to eye on what happened on January 6th. No shit. Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, just to refresh the memories of everyone, Mike Pence was there. Like, Mike Pence was in the Capitol and removed by security. And there was a lot of concern for his safety. And
including the gallows out in front of the Capitol.
Yeah.
And perhaps the people chanting, "Hang Mike Pence."
Yep.
Hang
yeah.
Mike Pence.
Yeah.
Was that hello. That might have been a hint for them.
And, you know, Pence is sort of a fascinating character in this moment. I think this is one of the only times we've really ever seen him break with the president. And it kind of goes back to that very day when the president was pushing him to essentially pull some magical trick out of his hat and invalidate the election. And Pence wouldn't go along with it. And I don't think could have, you know, pulled the trick out even if he wanted to. And the underlying context for this entire conversation is that many people believe that Trump wants to run again. In fact, Trump is saying...
he's saying...
Yeah. This is not a secret. I think what I was sort of thinking about when I saw these Pence comments is... I really doubt Pence will be on that ticket this time, basically.
either at the top or in the second spot.
That's right. Yes. Yeah, got it.
Okay. Boy, so
well
much.
Well played, Addy. Well played.
So much going on. So much to talk about with our panel today. With Jamal Simmons, Jason Dick, and Addy Baird, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and pick up on all the stuff we didn't get to yet here on today's roundtable, the Bill Press Pod. Talking a lot about infrastructure. Well, the people who are ready for that infrastructure bill are the members of the Laborers Union of North America, sponsors of today's podcast. We salute the good members of the Laborers Union. Infrastructure is music to their ears. They're already busy building America, and they're ready to rebuild America if Congress and the president ever get their act together and pass an infrastructure bill. We salute the members of LIUNA, over a half a million strong, under the leadership of President Terry O'Sullivan, and thank them for their support of the Bill Press Pod.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we're back with today's roundtable here on the Bill Press Pod. Jamal Simmons joins us from CBS News, Jason Dick from CQ Roll Call, and Addy Baird from BuzzFeed. I want to start with the president on the road this week. Two significant trips. First out to Tulsa, Oklahoma, to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the massacre held in the Greenwood section of Tulsa. Here is President Biden in Tulsa on that occasion.
My fellow Americans, this was not a riot. This was a massacre.
Jamal, that was a hugely significant act on the part of the president, right?
It was hugely significant. I think what we now know is that 100 years ago, there was a massacre that took out a significant part of Black wealth in this country. You know, very often African Americans are confronted with this question: well, why can't you be like name the immigrant group, right? This immigrant group came here; they didn't have anything, they built something, and it worked. Well, you know, African Americans were like that, mm-hmm. right? They left slavery, they started businesses, they built, you know, communities. Many of them left the South and they went north and did the same. same thing. But what happened was racism got in the way, and either it was, you know, redlining, or, you know, something as benign as redlining, or segregated communities where they couldn't move, or it was out and out violence, like what took place in Tulsa, or what took place in Elaine, Arkansas. And so I think, you know, what's good about this particular moment is that America is sort of sorting through all of that bad history. And while it's frustrating for a lot of people who don't really want to learn about that bad history, I think if we come to grips with it, we now can do things to make the future better, knowing that we've done some stuff that we need to sort of figure out and fix from the past.
So, Jason, I want to fess up, and I am sure I am not the only American who would admit this. I never heard of Greenwood and the Tulsa massacre before the last few couple of months when people started talking about it with this anniversary coming.
You know why, Bill? Hold on. You know why? Because you don't listen to enough hip hop. That's the problem.
I confess to that too.
No, you're both absolutely right. I mean, this is not something that's a part of any curriculum, you know, in most schools. I mean, I'm from the West, you know, I'm from Arizona, and, you know, Oklahoma is not that far away. Never heard a word about it. My sort of entree to it, I think, was, you know, there was a, the last year, what, you know, there was a pop culture, you know, sort of iconography of the Watchmen HBO series, was largely set in Tulsa, and used that as the sort of the framing device for the whole, series. And, but, you know, it's just this thing that was whitewashed, you know, it was vaporized, you know, from any kind of critical analysis or reckoning. And I mean, this is why it is such a big deal, you know, that Biden went there, that he's the first president, you know, to go there on this anniversary. I mean, it just can't be, you know, overestimated how big a deal it is to recognize this, and bring it out from just being a subcultural thing.
And Addy, he made a very important announcement while he was there, the president did, saying that he had was naming or asking Vice President Kamala Harris to head the entire national effort to secure voting rights for Americans, and particularly to get the For the People Act passed. As he said, that's a hell of a lot of work to do, and she's got it.
Yeah, I saw someone on Twitter sort of quipping that Biden's keeping up the classic American tradition of giving your vice president impossible jobs. Joe Biden's vice presidential job, for example, was essentially like cure cancer. Kamala Harris is a talented negotiator, a talented politician, and voting rights is a deeply important issue. We sort of alluded to it a little bit earlier, with this maybe being one of the places where Democrats would go nuclear to try and push this through without Republican support, because while we've been talking about the possibility of some Republican support for infrastructure or other different, you know, Biden priorities, like the point that Jamal has made many times, Republicans don't go to work every day to pass good policy. They go to work every day to uphold white Christian culture. And there is nothing more dangerous to them than having more people vote. Anyway, now I'm sort of getting off the topic of Kamala Harris, but yeah, huge jump for her. This is going to be quite the undertaking, but absolutely a vital piece of this presidency.
Now, not to trivialize it, but I'm sorry, go ahead. Yes.
Well, I just wanted to say, I think for Kamala Harris, this is actually an opportunity, even though it is, it's one you wonder, like, are we really friends here? but it may be an opportunity because the truth is, even though people rallied around her in the middle of the election when she got chosen to be vice president, she does have a political soft spot when it comes to African-American, in particular African-American activists mm-hmm. and people who are younger. And so this gives her an opportunity to do something for part of the electorate that is suspicious of her because of her background as the top cop and all the stuff yeah. we heard back mm-hmm. during the election. So I think she probably does want to do this because it will give her, if she's successful, and even if she's not successful, but she fights hard and she can build relationships, it will help shore up her political position in the Democratic infrastructure.
That's an excellent point. The New York Times reports this morning that she actually went to the president and said, I want this. I want to take this on, right? Unlike maybe
that's right.
going to Guatemala and dealing with the situation down there.
She said, solve immigration, race relations, yeah. and let's see what else, climate change maybe?
This is I saw someone say, why don't we just like put Kamala on Israel next, you know?
Right, yes. she and Kushner can get right
Absolutely.
On
Absolutely.
All right. Before we move on, Jason, there was one other trip of the president this week. So in the middle of all of this stuff going on, he just packs up and goes off to the beach for 2 days. He's coming back to the White House today. Pretty bold move, right? What does it say about Biden? A little too cocky or a little confident?
I think that this is a hint of what our colleague Gabriel De Benedetto had called in New York Magazine Biden's superpower, which is his relatability. I mean, he is able to lower the temperature across the board on a number of big ticket tense moments. And this is a fairly tense moment, but it's also, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, Delaware is not that far away, right? You know, like, I mean, Rehoboth Beach is a very short ride on Marine One, from DC, from Joint Bears Andrews. So it's not like he's going to Mar-a-Lago to golf.
Or Hawaii.
Martha's Vineyard or wherever, you know, presidents, you know, have typically gone. He's blessed by his proximity to his home. But I think that this is, you know, he is able to do these things and also like continue to talk to people on the phone. And he's coming back to the White House today. And I just feel like that's the kind of, I mean, I look at that and I'm thinking like, that's a real good work-life balance he's got there. Like to be able to say like, you know what, I'm going to Europe for like a while on this long trip that's going to make a lot of long nights. And it's the first international trip a president's made in quite a while. I've got that coming before me. I've got all this infrastructure stuff and it's still a recess week. So yeah, I'm going to hop over with Jilly to ride bikes in Rehoboth and get some more ice cream. And I think that's why people like him. You know what I mean? He's just like, he's like that. People are thinking like, that sounds like a really good idea. Maybe I should go for a bike ride today.
Plus,
I can go back to work.
Plus, I think he gets a lot of props. He did this for his wife's birthday. Right.
Yeah. So then that's answered, right?
Right.
Exactly.
Happy right, wife, so happy country.
Absolutely.
All right, Jamal, another president reportedly is going to get on the road soon, former President Donald Trump. They're saying that he's got two rallies planned later this month and one rally early in July. Is this what the Republican Party needs?
It may not be what they need, but it's certainly what they want. and maybe not the ones in Washington, but all the rest of them in the country they can't get enough of this guy. They just can't quit him. And the Democrats want it too, because, you know, I have long believed that the secret to Joe Biden's success is the shadow of Donald Trump looming over American politics. And every time people start to get a little bit like, you know, questioning, or maybe it's a little hinky, Trump shows his head and they go, oh, but wait a minute, we can't go back to that to that crazy guy that we were dating before. This is not going to work.
Right. And Addy, is there any doubt what Donald Trump's message is going to be at these rallies? Lindsey Graham says we're going to talk about the future. Is Donald Trump going to talk about the future? Really?
Yeah, I think we could probably just the four of us on this podcast put together the entire remarks, despite the fact that they will be completely off the cuff, like completely out of nowhere. Like, it'll be like, remember how I was like ripped from the presidency, and also like shower heads don't have enough water.
And toilet flushes.
I think it's also going to be it's going to be a seminar on how to start a successful blog.
Yes.
Well, you know, one of my favorites too, Addie, was when he did the event for Kelly Loeffler, and he, like, at the end, he was like, wait a minute, where are you? Come up here. Okay, don't stay too long. Like, get off. Nobody wants to hear that too much.
Absolutely.
Like, he was the worst endorser. He was the worst endorser on the planet.
And then they were all like, you know, thank you so much, our king.
So we have talked about the voting rights, the effort to suppress the vote, the effort on the part of the Congress. Jamal, you mentioned it, and the part of the state legislatures. Things got a little, went to like another level this week when Michael Flynn appeared at a QAnon rally, of all places, and was asked by a veteran, why can't we have a violent coup here just like they had? He says in Myanmar, meaning Myanmar. Here's that clip and Michael Flynn's response.
I'm a simple Marine. I want to know why what happened in Myanmar can't happen here. No reason. I mean, it should happen here. No reason. But that's right.
No reason it can't happen here. It should happen here. Jamal, what the hell? A violent coup against the United States?
Yeah, it makes you long for the days of John McCain, right? Remember when McCain would stand up at these rallies and tell everybody to sit down with that silly stuff? These guys aren't really making a secret about what they're up to. Like, that's the thing, right? Like, we keep trying to figure it out. What do they mean? How does it play?
You can believe them.
You know, they're telling us they had a violent insurrection against the United States Capitol where they wanted to hang the vice president. Like, this is not a mystery. So, you know, I think Mike Flynn should actually be brought up on charges at some point again for the way he's been behaving. This guy is a danger to national security.
I thought maybe I'm just old fashioned that advocating a violent coup against the United States was treason, but
all right, Bill, get into the 21st century here.
I guess the rules have changed. But that's a former national security advisor. We also heard last week, and I'd like to play again, a sitting member of Congress. Yeah, wacky for sure, but still a sitting member of Congress, Matt Gaetz, who said this about the Second Amendment.
The Second Amendment is not about, it's not about hunting, it's not about recreation, it's not about sports. The Second Amendment is about maintaining within the citizenry the ability to maintain an armed rebellion against the government.
So, Jason, it sounds like he's calling for another January 6th.
It certainly does. And of course, Mr. Gaetz is has a very interesting situation that he's in right now with potentially being investigated by federal authorities for sex trafficking. So of underage women. So we'll see how this goes. You know, we'll see how this goes. You know, these sort of comments go. If he is arraigned or arrested or indicted. It seems like this is the way to, you raise a lot of money for your campaigns and then transfer it to a legal defense fund, say. I mean, maybe that's a cynic's way of looking at it, but I think that Matt Gaetz is trying to hoover up as much money as he can for a potentially long, protracted legal standing problem.
Okay, so one last question before we go to your favorite story of the week. I don't know who to throw this to, so I'm just going to mention what is coming up and see who wants to tackle it here. But we've learned now this Senate is going to receive a report before the end of this month from the Pentagon about UFOs.
Bill, you know this one is for me.
All right, Addie, and the Pentagon is now saying there were some 120 incidents, and they cannot confirm that they were alien spacecraft, but they can't deny it either.
I'm literally like vibrating with excitement. This is all I've been able to think about. Also, like Barack Obama went on, I think it was maybe one of the late night shows, and was like, look, dude, like there's some stuff out there that we don't understand. I don't know. Maybe this isn't for me, because all I have to say is like, I'm really excited. I love aliens. I think that like, it's really, I think it's like really awesome that we're going to like learn some more about aliens. Although I shouldn't get my hopes up. The New York Times writes like the same story about alien phenomena like every year. And we all are like, but you know, I think it's interesting. There's definitely stuff out there that we don't understand. And I personally do not believe that aliens have visited Earth, even though they are out there. But I am interested to look at this evidence, and I am willing to be swayed.
It's good that you're open-minded about UFOs.
You know, Bill, I am an avid science fiction consumer, and I just have to say, Star Trek is the only the only place where aliens show up and it turns out well for us. And every other story, when the aliens come, they don't mean to, like, you know, hang out and teach us new great wonderful things.
Okay, I did just read Contact by Carl Sagan, where things go really quite well, and we learn a lot from aliens. So that's my hope.
That is that is true. That's the other one.
And Roll Call, I imagine Jason is going to have a special edition just on UFOs, right?
We already have, our cartoonist is so excited. He's already done some of the artwork. I want to note too that it's not just the kind of sci-fi crowd that is thinking about this. I mean, Harry Reid, the former Senate Majority Leader, and as starchy a realist as you get, has been talking about this for years. And I think if Reid really doesn't like spend a lot of time on things that he doesn't think like have some sort of basis in reality. So I'm really curious what this report's going to be. I think it's going to be fascinating.
Yep, I can't wait either. We'll see what happens. Great rundown of the news of the week. Thank you so much, Addie Baird, Jason Dick, and Jamal Simmons. As we always say, with everything going on, there's always one story to just stop you in your tracks to make you either laugh or cry. And we call it our favorite story of the week. Addie, you want to start us off?
Yes. You know, our last little conversation is actually a perfect little entry. Okay. I love to bring stories about space as my favorite story of the week, because space makes politics feel very small and less important. my favorite story this week, there's a handful of really great reporting stories about this, but NASA is sending some probes to Venus, and I think it's going to be really interesting. Venus, the Times headline here was, new NASA missions will study Venus, a world overlooked for decades. We don't really even understand like what's under the clouds on Venus, which is a planet extremely similar to Earth in a lot of ways. And I just think it is very exciting. So two spacecraft, Da Vinci Plus and Veritas, are going to go to Venus and check it out in the next decade or so. And it makes me very excited.
I think Addie's going to be the first one to buy a ticket on the next interplanetary, spacecraft.
I do it in a heartbeat.
Jamal, what caught your attention?
So I'm a the older I get, I'm becoming a little soft romantic, and I am completely consumed by J-Lo and Ben Affleck figuring it out. It just takes me back to my youth, and I just feel like, you know, if they can figure it out, the world, maybe we can figure out politics too.
Just watch Geely again, you'll get over it.
they both tried so hard, love, and they just can't quite figure it out.
And Jason?
So, as everyone knows, today is National Donut Day.
Oh, my God.
And so I was actually looking for some story that I could, you know, sort of like understand the origins of National Donut Day a little bit better. And so I came across, you know, most people just write now about the giveaways at Krispy Kreme and Dunkin' and all this kind of stuff. But the thing that I saw that caught my eye was actually a fairly a lengthy narrative of National Donut Day by Kevin Fagan in the San Francisco Chronicle from years ago, from 2009. But he wrote about the origins of it, which I was unaware of. And it started around 1938 in Chicago, and it was a way for people to recognize the efforts of the Salvation Army in World War I, where they distributed donuts to American troops in Europe. And so it's got a nice kind of patriotic and humanitarian thing. And, you know, let's just face it, it's just a really good excuse to go get, you know, your face with 500 calories of congealed sugar.
To go get a donut. All right, National Donut Day. Well, my favorite story of the week, one of my favorite targets, I guess, or punching bags is Rudy Giuliani. And lately I've been wondering, whatever the hell happened to Rudy Giuliani? I mean, he was everywhere for a year on cable news and with all the mess about the election and showing up at Mar-a-Lago and at the Trump Hotel. And then he just sort of disappeared because he has his legal problems. But I discovered this week he's got, where else, his own podcast called the Common Sense Podcast, where he not only has to do a couple of podcasts a week, he's got to go out and look for sponsors to make money to support his podcast. And it is no surprise that Rudy Giuliani ends up teaming up with Mike Lindell, Mr. My Pillow. And Rudy Giuliani is the pitch man, the latest pitch man for My Pillow and their other products. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen, Rudy Giuliani.
I've been sleeping on My Pillows for some time. I love them. They're simply the very best pillows ever made. But I just found out that they also have a wide assortment of other incredible products like their mattress topper, sheets, towels, and slippers.
Slippers. How the mighty have fallen, right? From America's mayor to hawking slippers.
That was the sound of the onion shutting down out of despair.
I just worry for that pillow with that hair dye. Like, will it hold?
I don't want to see it in the morning. Okay.
Hey, it's abusive to the pillows.
Thank you so much, guys. Addie Bear, thank you so much. Jason Dick and Jamal Simmons. Jamal, welcome. Hope to have you back soon.
Hope to be here. Thank you guys for having me.
And thank all the rest of you for listening to today's podcast. It's always great to have you with us. We'll be back next week on Tuesday with a special interview with Charlie Sykes, a renegade Republican and founder and creator of the Great Bulwark, which I hope you check out every morning. I certainly do. And we'll find out from Charlie Sykes whether the Republican Party will ever move on from its infatuation with Donald Trump. And with that, meanwhile, just have a great weekend. Keep yourself strong and safe. And then come back and see us on the next edition of the Bill Press Pod.